Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
This week, we're talking with nutritionist Kim Pearson about the pros and cons of veganism for runners.
For runners in particular, protein is really key. We know that athletes and people doing a lot of exercise have a higher protein requirement than the average person. The nutrients required for energy production are really important. So, and again, this is relevant to everybody, but in particular, runners need a lot of energy.
Yeah.
So iron, B12, vitamin D. So low levels of any of these nutrients can lead to fatigue.
Rick, you're back.
I am. I've been nappy changing my way around the UK and now I am back in the podcast studio.
Have you set yourself a new PB? Yeah, nappy changing, five in the day.
Oh, yeah, probably. I reckon I'm down to maybe 2 minutes per nappy.
That's pretty good. Well done.
Yeah, yeah.
New dadding. How are you now officially a running dad?
I'm now officially a running dad and I should probably get that updated in the old Twitter.
Put it on LinkedIn
profile,
straight away.
Make it official. Dad, runner.
Dad. Change every
podcaster.
Single... Change every single picture you've got to you just pushing a Thule around everywhere.
No, it's been amazing, mate. And I've been trying to, along with all the nappy changing, do the odd little run and make the most of some of your advice about, you know, these little windows of opportunity to get out. Because I think it can feel quite claustrophobic for both parents in the first couple of weeks. Mm. You know, it's like, but it's been lovely actually.
Great. What running have you done?
I'm
30 miles.
No, I did actually go out for a couple of hours actually.
Oh, nice.
On a Saturday because my wife's best mate came over, and I thought she hasn't really come over to see me. She's come over to see our child and...
No,
and
it was best that you're out of the way.
So in some ways, yeah. I was doing everyone a favour by getting out for a couple of hours. But it was a reminder to me also like how important running is to me actually. And it's a great kind of release valve as well. You kind of think,
nice.
Great. I come back and feel, you know, not tired, but energised actually. Yeah. So, but it's been, it's also completely bewildering the whole thing, but it's been amazing.
So when are you doing your sub 5 minute mile?
Yeah, someone was asking about this. It has fallen off the cliff a little bit, but I will give it a go. I'm going to give it a go in March.
God, you're giving yourself a buffer there, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I was pretty close to being fit enough for the sub 5 minute mile before Christmas, and then it just didn't quite work out on dates, and then it was like I had to go to a wedding, then it's Christmas. Like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was all getting a bit close to the birth.
Yeah.
So now I'll have right. another go, Ben.
No, fine. I'll let you off March. Fine. We'll see what happens.
So should we get our guest of the week on, Ben?
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete.
Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown. Our guest this week is Runner's World resident nutritionist Kim Pearson. Kim has worked in nutrition for 15 years, is a keen runner and writes a monthly column on nutrition for Runner's World magazine. We're delighted to be joined by her today to talk about veganism. So welcome, Kim, to the Runner's World podcast.
Hi.
For anyone still unsure, what is the difference between vegetarianism and veganism?
So vegetarians don't eat animals. That includes meat, poultry, fish, seafood, even things like gelatin, and that are a derivative of collagen or animal rennet, which is derived from the stomachs of cows and used to harden some cheeses. Vegans take things a step further, so they not only eat anything an animal's had to die for, but they also don't eat anything that an animal produces, which includes eggs, dairy products like milk, butter, cream, cheese, and they don't typically eat honey either.
Right. Well, that's one of my favourite foods in that list.
I know, right?
I think that the main thing that kind of when it comes up and we talk about veganism and running are the performance positives that come with a change to a plant-based diet. From a nutritional perspective, what would those be?
Often when people turn vegan, they really reassess their whole diet. If you do it well and you really plan your meals out, often you end up taking more care over what you're eating than before. Also, you know, with a good vegan diet, when you're focused on things like pulses, nuts, seeds, lots of fresh produce, vegetables, then it is a nutrient-dense diet. You have, although you're not necessarily covering all of your nutrient bases, your intake of vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, fibre can be good for certain nutrients.
Probably when you change to a vegan diet, you do eat more veg and more fruit, I reckon. I mean, I haven't gone down the vegan route, but would you say that was your experience?
Yeah, so when we're talking about the pros of it, it's not necessarily something that from a performance point of view or like all those sorts of things, but what it did help was just reevaluate what you were eating and how to just change your diet a bit in the broader terms, as in you're looking at your daily consumption and all of a sudden you're thinking like, well, actually, do you know what? I can't eat that later. So what am I going to eat? Mm. So you're learning new recipes, you're trying new foods, you're researching, you know, I really enjoy that. Oh, maybe I can try this. And it kind of ends up being like, it's quite fun because you're just, if you like food, then learning about new food is great. You're suddenly just involved in this new process of being like, oh, I'm going to roast some bulgur wheat. And you're like, oh, I've never done this before. And you do it and it's lovely.
But what would you say are some of the cons, though, Kim, of veganism? Because it can get presented, I think, as this kind of silver bullet, you know, to health. But actually, I'm not sure that's accurate, really.
It's certainly harder to get optimal levels of certain nutrients from a vegan diet. So the one that we talk about a lot is vitamin B12. Most of the sources of B12 are animal sources. There aren't very many sources of B12 in a vegan diet, so typically you would need to supplement. And then there are a number of different nutrients. Take, for example, iron. You can get iron from vegan plant sources, but the forms of iron that we get from plants is different to the form of iron that we get from animals. So heme iron, which is the iron we get from animal products, is much more easily absorbed and utilised by the body compared to non-heme iron that we get from plants. Right. And there are a number of examples like this. So a number of different nutrients where the plant version is not necessarily in the active form. So the body, our bodies, when we consume it in those forms, has to go through certain processes to make it able to be used by the body.
So let's talk about runners and those who regularly exercise. Are there sort of immediate things that everyone has to be very mindful if they're going to adopt a vegan diet?
Yeah. Absolutely. And so I think for runners in particular, protein is really key. We know that athletes and people doing a lot of exercise have a higher protein requirement than the average person. The nutrients required for energy production are really important. So, and again, this is relevant to everybody, but in particular, runners need a lot of energy.
Yeah.
So iron, B12, vitamin D. So low levels of any of these nutrients can lead to fatigue. I think, you know, one of the key factors for runner as well is hunger. If you're covering a lot of distance, you're going to feel hungry.
For sure.
Yes.
But animal foods like meat, they fill us up. They keep us satisfied for a longer time than carbohydrate-based foods that typically are broken down and used up much more quickly. And I don't know what your experience was when you...
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I eat a lot. So when I was switching stuff around, I would just go by volume
right.
A lot of the time. And I kind of feel like that would be the benchmark of like, oh, I'd eat enough of it until I felt full. And I guess that's, you know, as I think my body's quite used to the patterns of, I've been quite strict before with my diet. And I kind of think that my body's learned to react to certain...
You're quite adaptable.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of almost got to the point where it knows if I've had like something that's got some good fat in it and some protein and it feels fuller quicker than it does if I just eat a lot of carbs. I definitely think that it does that. So I think that there was a kind of honeymoon period where I was just like the idea of what I was doing and changing the diet around was nice and kind of like felt better for it because Well, you feel better for it because you're changing your diet and you're eating new foods and that makes you feel better. But then there's also you feel better for it because you feel like you're doing something positive. So there's kind of like a sort of...
Placebo effect.
Well, kind of. I mean, maybe not even placebo, but you kind of actively think it's a betterment. So you kind of like... So you kind of... It's twofold. But yes, I did think that I found myself reaching for snacks quite a bit more. Mm. But obviously, vegan snacks.
I mean, I was I was vegetarian, strictly vegetarian, for 14 years.
Wow.
And, you know, I just remember always feeling hungry. I was hungry all the time.
Right.
And I could eat a massive bowl of pasta and then still be sort of raiding the biscuits. And I had cravings. My blood sugar levels were all over the place. I was tired all the time, constantly deficient in iron. And I remember when I started to eat meat, it was just a huge difference for me. I could eat such smaller quantities, but actually feel full and satisfied by them.
Why did you become vegetarian in the first place, and why did you come back to eating meat?
So I became vegetarian when I was 14.
Yeah.
I was brought up in a farming community and I saw the factory farming of chickens firsthand, and it was just an instant thing for me.
Mm.
You know, looking at how those animals are raised, I just thought I can't justify that sort of treatment of animals for the sake of some variety on my plate.
Mm.
And I was vegetarian, as I said, for 14 years. And certainly, you know, I found it difficult to control my weight. I put on weight quite easily. My iron levels were often on the floor. I had to take a supplement constantly.
Yeah.
You know, there were all sorts of things, yeah, energy levels, certainly. And it was a nutritionist who I was working with while I was studying. When I was studying, I was still vegetarian, so I considered that I had quite a healthy veggie diet.
Yeah.
He really encouraged me to consider eating meat and, you know, looked at all of the research with me and said, look, I think you need to really consider it, because you cannot, there are certain things that you cannot get from plant foods that you can from meat. And so it took me a while to get my head around the idea, because half of my life I had been vegetarian.
Yeah.
But certainly I think it's, you know, what I would like to stress is it's very much an individual thing. Vegetarianism did not suit me. For some people, they go vegan, they feel great.
Mm.
You know, if they do it well, they do feel good. They do have energy. They find that their digestive function improves. Other people will feel rubbish. It really is such a personal thing.
Yeah,
I think that's a lot to be said about that. This kind of like all diet choices become this big prescribed thing. One, you must do it this way and everyone must do it that way. But the individual, it's so like there's so much grey area in terms of like, I don't like eating a lot of red meat because digestively, I think I don't process that well.
That's common.
Right. So I don't eat a lot of it. I'll eat chicken and I like white meat and that kind of suits me fine.
Yeah.
But then there's the whole bravado of being a man and eating a steak. I don't want to eat a steak. It takes 3 days for me to get rid of that thing. So, you know, it's sort of this balance between everyone has these, you know, it's about choosing something that, you know, your body will tell you quite quickly, I think, if something's working or not.
I think that's really key. Just being mindful of what you were eating, eating consciously, unprocessed foods that you know where they've come from, if it's animal produce, how that animal's been reared, and just be mindful of how it affects you, because, you know, we all lead busy lives. It's easy to just throw things down our throat and not really give it a second thought and not necessarily make the connection between how certain foods are making us feel. So it's just about being mindful.
Yeah. I mean, I think we ought to talk about the Game Changers documentary that's come out. Obviously, it made headlines, brought vegan discussion into the mainstream, and no, it's very compelling viewing, and it suggests, if anyone hasn't watched it, it suggests that going vegan has incredible kind of performance gains, I guess, as a result. You've seen the documentary, Kim?
I have. Yeah. I saw it a while back, yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of it? And as a nutritionist, do documentaries like that sort of set off any alarm bells?
Look, the Game Changers documentary is undeniably very slick and convincing.
Yeah.
And I have seen a lot of people who've been convinced to go vegan as a result of watching it.
Is that you, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, that was...
That's another one. I think the thing that really frustrates me about Game Changers is how hugely biased it is. This is not a balanced look at all of the evidence. It's a case of cherry-picked data used to create a documentary with huge funding from people with a vested interest in pushing veganism. You know, it's a very one-sided argument. And you could do the same sort of thing. You know, if you were pro-meat, you could look through all of the scientific data, cherry-pick the studies that reinforce the beliefs that you have, and with enough money, create a very lovely, slick documentary pro-meat. So what I would really encourage anybody considering a vegan diet to do is to don't simply take information from one source and then go in search of other, you know, information that backs that up. Take advice from different experts, do your research, look at people with varying points of view who don't have such a biased agenda, and form your own conclusions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, we've done with that. We can not talk about Game Changers now. I feel like it's had enough of like back and forth in the world. But I think the bigger drive for a lot of people to adopt a vegan diet is actually the ethical reasons.
You know, it comes down to the individual. Some people just simply don't feel that it's ethical for us to eat animals. And it very much comes down to your own personal beliefs. From an ethical point of view, I always need to know where the meat that I'm eating has come from and how it's been raised. So you can go into a supermarket and see two packs of chicken breasts, and one is like the standard, you know, £4 factory farmed, the other one's £8, and you think, hang on a minute, the organic one's double the price of the normal one. But actually, when you look into how those two different animals have been reared, you can see why there's such the price difference. And nowadays, more than ever, we do have access to well-reared, you know, traditionally reared animals that have been fed the diet that they are supposed to eat, rather than mass-produced, factory-farmed animals who have to be routinely fed antibiotics because they're living in conditions that they are not designed to. They're eating food that they are not supposed to. So I think that, you know, you can eat meat and do it, you know, ethically.
We talk about, you know, organic meat versus factory farmed. I guess the argument would say, well, actually, you know, organic is a lot more expensive. And if I don't have the budget to eat meat in that way, what would your response be, Kim? Would you say it's better to eat less but better quality meat?
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
The other thing is as well to eat cuts that we don't typically tend to eat so much. So we're so used to going into the supermarket and buying chicken breast, for example, like I just mentioned. But instead, it's actually more cost effective to buy the whole chicken, roast it, use all of it, take the bones, make some stock or some bone broth. Or, you know, speak to your local butcher if you've got one. You know, find those cuts that aren't so popular and therefore are cheaper, but still really good quality.
There's also various claims that have gone around about, well, you don't need to go to get your protein from meat. And one example would be peanut butter, which I think is a runner's favourite. I like it anyway.
I love it.
But you can say, we actually, you know, from 2 tablespoons of peanut butter, you can get, you know, what you can from X amount of steak. So actually, the need for these kind of meat products from a protein perspective is negligible. What do you think about that? Is that a fair enough way to look at things?
So I think there are a couple of points to make here. In terms of protein content, peanut butter is going to have around 25 to 30 grams of protein per 100 grams of peanut butter. Compare that to steak, you're looking at, again, between 20 to 30 grams of protein, depending on the cut, per 100 grams. So the protein content is comparable. However, we were talking earlier about calorie consumption. And if you look at, if you were going to consume 100 grams of peanut butter, your calorie intake is, you're going to look at about 600 calories there. Versus with steak, probably between 150 to 250 calories per 100 grams, depending on the cut of steak. So you're talking for getting that same amount of protein, you need to eat about 3 times the amount of calories.
Right.
And then there's the quality of the protein as well.
Yeah.
So animal proteins are generally complete proteins, meaning that they provide all of the essential amino acids the body needs. Whereas plant proteins aren't. So typically you have to combine different types of proteins from plant sources to get all of your essential amino acids.
So say like a runner is supplementing their protein with a powder a lot of those vegan powders will be a combination of pea and another protein source.
The vegetable? Yeah.
Yes, the peas. Very high in protein. Once you've stripped out everything else. So, you know, that it's not, it'll be pea protein and then maybe like pumpkin seed or something so that the all the amino acids are in there, right? That's kind of how those work, right?
Another reason why a lot of people go vegetarian or vegan is for the environment. We think particularly red meat and cows, that has a, you know, their methane and all the rest of it has a detrimental effect on the ozone layer. What do you think that's a reason for going vegan, or do vegan sources also have, are they problematic in that way as well?
Again, interestingly, if you look at how animals are reared, it can have a big impact on the emissions that they're emitting. Also, you know, if you are, like we were saying before, if you are swapping to, for example, swapping milk to something like almond milk, then almonds are produced, you know, the other side of the world. For us, the energy required to produce almonds is really high. We're flying in things like avocados, coconuts. You know, this isn't local produce that we're making the swaps for. So, yes, animal farming does undoubtedly create emissions, but then it doesn't mean that all vegan foods just completely get let off the hook here. And I think, you know, regardless of whatever diet you feel is right for you, we could all do well to focus on local produce, foods that have been produced locally to us, that are in season, that have been produced in a way that is, you know, right, basically. So regardless of what diet you choose, it's about how your food is produced.
Yeah.
So would you, so if we, now that we've tried to address veganism as a performance food, what is the perfect performance diet? Is there such a thing?
I don't think that is, because it's so different for everybody. Everybody's different. You're going to have people listening to this who have tried veganism and felt absolutely terrible on it, and then others who are vegan and actually feel great and have never felt better. So just with the example of veganism, it's a very individual thing. But then there are certainly key things that all runners will need. Optimal amounts of protein, good quality fats, vitamins, minerals, carbohydrates at the right time in the right quantities. And again, it comes back to what we were saying about finding the balance that works for you.
Yeah, I often think that lots of the kind of pillars of nutrition, most of us probably know them, like, you know, consciously or subconsciously. We kind of know that we probably should be eating a large amounts of fruit and veg, probably some good quality meat, you know, like a large variety of foods. And then it becomes kind of faddish and kind of fashionable to go, actually, now, you know what? It's all about veganism, or it's all about the paleo diet or whatever. These quite extreme forms that actually, yeah, they haven't got huge amounts of scientific evidence backing up.
I would fully still absolutely encourage everyone to try and do one day, if not 2 days a week, on a vegan diet.
Right.
And then supplement your normal diet with a couple of vegan days, just to see
how you
adjust to it, and actually just more how you are made to think about what you're eating. Not, again, on performance, from a nutritional point of view, not ethically, not environmentally, just think about what you're eating, helps you sort of think of some new recipes, some different ideas. That was the huge plus for me, from trying it out.
What do you think? Do you think people should eat meat every day?
Not necessarily, no. Yeah. And, you know, you made a good point about variety there. Actually, so many of us eat the same things day in, day out, that if you do create yourself a challenge like one vegan day a week, then you are challenging yourself to increase a variety, if you do it well, increase a variety in your diet. And that's certainly a really good thing.
Kim, thank you so much for joining us to talk us through this. As you know, as I trialed it, I was thinking this is going to be the future. It wasn't for me, but I, you know, it's great to have you in to sort of offset some of my nonsense chat with some authoritative bits and pieces. So thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
His fingers on a button, his ears to the ground. He's done a bit of Googling and he's had a nose around. He's a detective wearing running shoes. Kerry McCarthy and his weekly running news.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kerry McCarthy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. That was lovely. That was kind of sort of almost a Gregorian chant.
This is very excited to be back.
Yeah, clearly. Hello to everyone. I'm going to roll through a few things this week. Firstly, if you are registered for the Tokyo Marathon this year, then I would log on and check all your details because you ain't going nowhere. I'm very sorry to say. The mass participation race at the Tokyo Marathon, this morning it was confirmed, it has been cancelled due to the coronavirus, or COVID-19, as we now have to call it in a very sci-fi fashion. They've changed the name of it.
Oh, I didn't know.
Well, yeah.
Because of the beer? Are they up
in- I don't know. I mean, I did read that Corona had done some kind of very clever PR campaign where they tried to get the name changed to, like, the Budvar virus or something,
yeah,
which,
okay.
You know, was it's kind of an obvious move, but, you know,
yeah.
Well done, Corona.
Right.
Anyway, the name has been changed. But back to the main point of the story, which is that, yes, the marathon has been cancelled. The organisers have said that if you have a place, you can defer it until next year, but you will have to pay again.
Oh, how much is?
I can't remember. I should know this, having done it myself, but it's at the pointy end of the scale.
It's
quite expensive. It's not the £42 or something that London Marathon costs.
Yeah.
It's 100 and something.
Ugh.
If you have flights and accommodation and all that stuff checked, there is yet to be an update, and obviously it's going to be on a hotel by hotel or airline by airline basis. So I would get on the case immediately if you're just hearing this through us now. It's a real shame, isn't it?
Yeah, a real shame.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, you're the only person here who's run the race, so I don't really know much about the Tokyo Marathon.
But if you were chasing, if that was your sixth star,
yeah, people tend to leave that. Statistically, it is the one at which most or the majority of six-star medals are got because it's so culturally different from the rest. It's kind of, I know it depends on where you live in the world, but it's kind of a long way away.
Yeah.
It's expensive. Even the whole cost of the trip going out, flights and accommodation, is pricey.
Yeah.
So people tend to leave it to last. So if you were going out to get your six-star medal, massive commiserations on that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There is always next year. And obviously, safety comes first. The elite race will still be taking place because... they are, you know, their immune systems are tougher than ours or something. Or,
sure,
you know,
famously.
Because money.
Famously unfragile, the elites.
Yes, exactly. From the fragile to the distinctly robust, there's been another world record. Ugandan runner Joshua Cheptegei, who we've mentioned on the podcast previously, he smashed the 5K world record on Sunday at the Monaco Run 5K. He's the first guy to go under 13 minutes. He ran a time of 12:51, which improved on the previous record by a mere 27 seconds. I should add at this point, this is distinct from the 5,000 metres,
which
is obviously the same distance, but it's on the track.
Yes.
Yeah.
And out on the roads, it's obviously more difficult because you have sort of wind factors, gradients, camber, twisting and turning, all that kind of stuff. And the world record for 5,000 metres for men, incidentally, is 12:37, so significantly faster. But there is a video of it on the Runners World website, runnersworld.com/UK, if you want to watch it. I mean, you don't have to watch all 13 minutes of it or just under 13 minutes. But if you, as I did, fast forward to the last couple of minutes And what I did was, when I was watching it, I didn't watch him. I just watched the buildings to his side, because then you can get a real sense of
the pace.
Just how fast he's going. He's the bloody hell, he's whipping past those pillars. And it's just, yeah, it's, you know, nuts. I think the pace was like, I mean, what is it, 4:08 pace?
Yeah,
or 4:10 or something like that.
Miling, yeah.
Something insane. He actually broke the 10K world record in December at the Valencia 10K. And he's the 10,000 metre world champion on the track, so he has plenty of pedigree.
Yeah, and it'll be him against Farah in the Olympics.
Yes.
So actually kind of really exciting. And you might have to make Cheptegei the favourite now based on those.
Yeah, I mean, Samo is, you know, as great as he's been for GB, he's getting on a bit. He's switching back to the track after putting in a few years, logging the miles for the marathon. It'll be really intriguing.
And this guy's doing all right at the moment. So.
I mean,
amazing.
Yeah, not too bad.
Presumably was wearing the...
he was wearing Next Percent.
Yes, he was.
I don't want to be the kind of cynic in the room here. I just
well, congratulations.
But yeah, just
is that a bit like when somebody says no offense, but, and it's like they do mean offense.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing running. But yeah, I mean, records are a tumbling, aren't they?
Yeah,
with these.
It's a new era for sure. And then finally, there was more athletics at the weekend. It was the indoor Grand Prix in Glasgow on Saturday. Now, this isn't obviously running, but I think it's worth flagging anyway. Armand Duplantic,
I thought you were being really northern. Armand.
Armand.
He's not.
He's an American-born Swede, and he's a pole vaulter, and he broke the pole vault world record for the second time in a week, jumping 6 metres and 18. Now, you can go, wow, that's loads. But to put this in context, I Googled, what is the average height of a two-story British semi-detached house, yeah. Up to the gutter, not the pointy bit at the top, it's 5.7 meters. Wow. So if you imagine pole vaulting
over your
house,
yeah, wow. Have you watched a video of him doing it as well? I think it's on BBC. They show the side profile when he's clearing the bar, acres of room.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
He's got more to go.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the pole vaulters are very clever. Like the great Russian pole vaulter, Elena Istambayeva, she used to deliberately break it a centimetre at a time, as did Sergei Bubka, the Ukrainian, because they would get more money each time they did it. And they can control it. It's not like sprinting where it's like, how do you control that? Yeah. Do you remember Bolt used to get accused of like holding something back? And it's like, you can't do that in 100 metres. You can absolutely do it in the pole vault.
So he's there, you go, he's gonna be clearing 7 metres soon.
That's mad though, isn't it? Pole vaulting over your own house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying, you know, obviously the whole idea of that doing that's mad, but just the height.
Yeah. And then just a quick whip round the other runners and riders. Shelly-Ann Fraser, the great Jamaican sprinter, did her thing. She won the 60 metres, obviously, in 7.16 seconds. I was talking to Ben Hobson about this earlier. She has awesome hair.
Oh, with the hair.
That goes all the way down her back to kind of like the lumbar region. But just think how heavy it is and how much faster she could run if she didn't have that. Obviously, I'm not suggesting she, you know, cut it all off, you know, because fashion and having a life outside of running. But, I mean, it's, you know, she's carrying all that hair and still battering everyone. It's
maybe
very
it's a
impressive.
Sort of Samson sort of thing of actually power comes from the hair.
We were thinking actually like maybe it was like going all the way back through to like the early sprinting, and maybe like the guys would always have their gold chains on and then the girls would have their hair or the nails. And it's kind of like you don't see it in other running events, but I feel like the sprint's kind of a bit of peacocking.
For sure.
Start line proud, like look at me, I've presented my best, you know, my most ferocious self almost. Definitely. Rather than like, that's what I quite like about it.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be the same if they just sort of turned up in kind of, you know, Mr. Muscle kind of spectacles. And
hello.
Yeah.
And then finally, the British runner, Gemma Riki. You probably won't have been aware of her a couple of weeks ago, but you probably are now because she's been smashing records all over the place. She continued her impressive run of form by winning the 1,500 metres. 2 weeks ago, she broke the British indoor 800 metre record, which had been held by Jenny Meadows. Last week, she broke Laura Muir's British record for the indoor mile and along the way broke her 1,500 metre indoor record as well. This week, like I say, she won the 1,500 metres in 4:04 and change. Laura Muir won the 1,000 metres but failed to get the world record she wanted for that. She ran 3 seconds slower than she wanted. But yeah, it was a good weekend for athletics.
Were they wearing those shoes?
Oh, God.
That's, I mean, the poor girl has had to contend with all sorts of kind of stuff, saying, look, I know you've not heard of me, and now you've heard of me, and you're thinking it's the shoes, but it's not the shoes, it's the training.
It's the relentless hours and hours of hard work.
Yes.
Yeah.
I always find the indoor meets, I don't know about you guys, I've always found them a bit odd to watch, because the acoustics were a bit odd, the demographic of the people that go, and the track is obviously smaller, it's 200 metres, so there were lots and lots of laps.
Oh yeah, the bigger races, you're just like, wow, I'm almost dizzy. But the shorter stuff is great. I like it, because you kind of like, you get an immediate like, where's one done? Come on, do another one.
Well, when they do the sprints, obviously, then they have to like run and slam themselves into that kind of like spongy barrier at the end, don't they?
Yeah. No, I think it's great. I didn't watch enough of it, but I think that, well, we've had this chat before about like, so Diamond League and different distances being culled, and you know, it's only the indoor stuff that we're going to kind of see more of these distances continue. So,
I think
the more coverage, the better.
Yeah,
indeed.
Kerry, thanks very much
for
your weekly running news. So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to our guest, Kim Pearson, and to you, of course, for listening.
The Runner's World podcast was recorded at Number 8 Studios in Soho and is available on Acast, iTunes and all of your favourite podcast apps. If you've enjoyed the episode, please give us a review and remember to tune in next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.